to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Low up at Section Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. He's Matt Weber on the board. And Mr. Lou Michaels with us as well. S&P futures are down 15. Down 15, man. NASDAQ futures down 102. Dow futures down 69. We were down pretty much this amount yesterday. And then we came back on the close. We bought the dip. Imagine that. And closed pretty much unchanged everywhere. Maybe a little bit up in the Dow and down on the NASDAQ, but unchanged pretty much in the S&P. Lou, how are you?
Good morning, sir. I'm good. I've got power, and I've got water. After we had our pipes freeze here on a kind of a brutal cold weekend in Denver, but we're a lot better than my sister and all of her friends down in Texas.
Well, you know, the problem with Texas is you have a lot of Texicans down there. Who wants to live with Texicans?
I'm reminded, you know, what happened there, or what's happening there is a little bit reminiscent. I don't know if you remember, maybe 2009, we had, you know, the thunderstorms, Amdahl thunderstorms that came through Chicago and knocked out the power grid for about 800,000 people, I think, and were without power for days. I mean, in my neighborhood in the western suburbs, I was without power for like 4 days or 5 days, and had to run get a generator at Home Depot to keep my sump pump running. And anyway, it's amazing. you get these older style grids with bad, with an intentional kind of limit on how much power they can bring in from the outside. You have a renewable system that you know just completely shuts down basically. And all of that coming together in a cold spell, but nobody anticipated. And I mean, it's a mess. My sister's in Houston, and they've got snow on the ground. I mean, that's pretty bad.
I think Lua was the. I was watching the. I don't know what channel it was because they couldn't really get out at Audrey's this weekend, and it's the first ever wind chill warning ever. Warned about, for lack of a better term, in Houston and maybe Dallas, first ever.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, Dallas gets some bad weather and some cold snaps, but I was reading a couple of analyses of what was happening in Texas and why it was so problematic, and really the comment was, Texas is unique in certain aspects that contributed to this, but you know basically every power grid in the United States, because again, these things are all state run and state managed. Every one of these systems has its own separate weaknesses. You know, California's got its own issue that's been going on for now over a year with their rolling blackouts in the summertime because they can't generate enough electricity, or their system can't support enough electricity to supply their own grid. You know, the Chicago grid got knocked out, for days because, you know, you're living in a major metropolitan area and it was a thunderstorm and you're going, what, you know, why can't we survive this? Each one of these grids has specific weaknesses that are exposed by some kind of extreme like this. If I were living in Texas, I wouldn't be happy with the way this had been managed, but you know, they didn't have, for example, de-icing components built into those windmills, which increases their cost by something like 30 or 40%. They just didn't invest in it because they said, you know, how often is this going to happen?
Well, but it's
how often are we going to need this?
That is a very legitimate decision, though. I mean, somebody has to make it.
Somebody has to look at it and say, can we build this? Should we build this thing? I mean, this is the comment that, that you and I have had in terms of public policy with resource allocation. I mean, you could make cars 100% safe, for example, but they'd be virtually unviable. You know, nobody would be able to afford them. You could make highways 100% safe, but you'd increase the cost to such an extent that you could only build a couple of miles of them. These are decisions somebody had to make, and you know, if you're the pilot company, you're looking at your historical data on meteorological records and saying to yourself, how often am I going to have to deal with this this issue? And you know, if it's one time in 100 years, I think you got a hard time justifying that protective system needs to be built into your grid.
But if you're sober and have some common sense, maybe not in that order, these are problems to start with, Lou. I mean, no matter who it was, if Solomon was in charge, they would be a problem. But
sure.
but you ask yourself, who the hell are making these decisions? I mean, I had this guy from, some guy's on from Texas, and he's talking about the grid system. And he was on CNBC, and they were giving this big interview, and he's talking about various inputs to the system and how it's basically how it's so complicated, and every question is really how complicated it is to upgrade the system and blah blah blah, and do you let people from other states in, and does that really help? And so he's going through this entire routine. My mother used to say once in a while to me, nobody likes a smart aleck, right? And which of course was me. And I would like just one time, Lou, just to be a total ass and have like a stand next to the guy and put up with, you know, to say something totally smart alecky, and just paraphrase what the guy said. These are very difficult decisions, so we've elected to stay for 25 years in this job, getting a paycheck, and not address any of them. Which is essentially happened, right?
Right.
But I mean, why do you think?
Depending
that's
your
on what job, but depending on what side of the fence you're on, whether you're a Trump supporter or a Biden supporter, wherever you are, in my opinion, you have to look at these two guys, and you have to look at the people that are governors and so forth in these various states, and some of the people that masquerade as senators and representatives. I'm not saying they have a skill set. The skill set is to get elected, right? Because obviously they're doing it, and you and I aren't doing it. So you can't ever negate that they're not idiots. They have a skill set that you and I and the rest of the listeners don't have. I mean, Trubisky has a skill set that we don't have, even if we don't think he's the world's best quarterback. But my point is, what makes you think that working for these people, when the person who's working for them is a person that maybe supported them and everything, are people that are going to soberly sit there and go over the grid in Illinois and over the next 10 or 15 years, come out of that job where the grid is 50% improved because they were there when nobody even knows about it. They don't get a bonus about it. Nobody even cares if they do it, really, unless there's a problem. How do you ever advance when that is your system?
Well, this system and this process is exemplified not just in what's happening in Texas, but with the whole Wuhan flu COVID-19 response. I mean, I'm sure you and I have talked about this, the fact that after a certain extent or after a certain amount of time when we had more knowledge, as we gained more knowledge, it seemed to me and it seemed to you when we talked about it that folks were making it up as they were going along. And that's the exact worst thing that you can create or impression you can create in a public policy emergency.
Well, decisions were made to defend the decisions that were made 2 months before instead of saying we know more today, we're going to do something different. But you know what?
Exactly.
But you know what? Just give you an example when it comes to power grids, Lou, because every once in a while, I talk to everybody, right? And talk about being old, Lou. One of my favorite bartenders over at the Tripoli is a runner, Colleen. She's a terrific lady. She went to Notre Dame and then she went to Florida State, I think, and ran track. Anyway, her dad graduated with me. So talk about old, right? Well, her husband is this guy who does he's a high wire guy for the, well, he was from Commonwealth Edison, but now he's everybody. He'll go around the country if they have problems and power lines down. And I've learned so much about that industry from this guy. And, his name's Bobby. So one night I drive to Indiana. We had to go down to do something. Actually, I met a client someplace. So there's this big wind farm down in Indiana. You've seen it, man. It's like,
yes.
It's maybe like, was it like 60, 70 miles down I-65? There must be an area there where they get a lot of wind, right? So there's hundreds of windmills. And I see, you know, half of them chugging along pretty good. And I see the other half not doing anything. So I see Bobby, and I say, hey, Bobby, how come? Looks to me like they had a pretty breezy day. Why the hell are the rest of those things not? I mean, that's the day you live for when you got windmills, right? And he goes, well, the grid can't handle it. They got enough on the grid, and they don't want the windmills on there. I said, why would you ever not want the windmill on there when you got a coal-fired plant chugging away with coal? He goes, this thing is so screwed up. He says, it has to do with there's the old power lines, you know, the ones that are buzzing away. He says, they've got a lot of new ones where you can get way better conductivity. Because that's where the money needs to be spent, is in the high conductivity power lines.
Yeah.
Because you know the whole idea of electric cars being so spectacular. Well, if you have a windmill on your farm, yeah, they're gonna be fine. But if somebody is doing electricity 50 miles away and shipping it to you over an old line, you're degrading 20-30% along the way, right? Or whatever. So that's why it's so more efficient to have a gas furnace in your house than use electric heat. Because your gas furnace is 95% efficient. By the time you get the electricity, depending on how far it comes and where it comes from. Anyway, he was saying it's all about the lines and who are in there. And he goes, there's actually a lot of wind farms in like Dakota, in Minnesota, in those places. But they don't have any of the high capacity lines coming this way from Dakota or Minnesota. Now, you bump into Commonwealth Edison, who, of course, has made money for 100 and some years and has managed to pay off everybody. I won't say everybody, but has managed to do a pretty good job, shall we say, lobbying. Is that fair for my attorney?
And then, sure. I think that's fair and non-libelous, too.
Yeah, so but the idea, you're not going to say to Commonwealth Edison, even though you give them every raise they feel like, you're not going to say to those guys, oh, by the way, this is part of your grid, and we want you to participate in the upgrade of the grid like across Wisconsin so we can get cheap power from North to South Dakota. They're going to say, my grid's fine with me. What's that got to do with me? Type of thing. I mean, yeah. these are not easy questions.
And again, we have not federalized our power grid. There is, to a certain extent, an overriding entity that sort of looks at this stuff. That's FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, before whom I've appeared, by the way.
What did you do?
You know, I was in the process of representing the Department of Defense as a nuclear power plant came online.
You weren't like in a striped suit and cuffs or anything.
Pardon me?
You weren't like a striped suit and cuffs or anything.
No, I was in front of them. I was in front of them trying to get some kind of sane rate limitation on what was about to come into New Mexico from this facility in West Texas. Again, the complexities of all this, FERC, you know, regulates a lot of the interstate movement of power, but most of these decisions are made on a state-by-state basis. And so, you know, in Texas's case, for example, the ERCOT or whatever it is, the Texas Power Utility Operation had taken something like 85% of Texas off of a grid that allowed it to share power and purchase large amounts of power from outside. And so when you do that, I don't know if it would have worked in this case because everybody else was freezing too, but when you do that, all of a sudden you don't have a backup. And I think one of the things that jumps out at you, and I mean, this is always going to be political, obviously, but one of the things that jumps out at you about Texas and California and other places, at least at this stage where we've got people screaming, we got to have renewable energy and, you know, zero carbon footprint. I think everybody and their dog should be looking at nuclear power and saying, you know, I really don't care how many windmills or how many acres of solar panels we've got sitting out there. That's all great. But for every one of these places we build, we've got to have an ability to have some backup. And whether it's a national backup system of high capacity nuclear plants that are put strategically around the country to provide power into the grid when other systems shut down, or something else. I don't know, but if I was Texas, I'd be looking and saying, you know, this is ridiculous. We've got to upgrade our infrastructure so that we can accept power in, and then let's put some nuclear backup in here so that we, you know, we have a reserve in case we need it.
Well, the first question.
Is there any question that as electric cars come online? I mean, I got into a discussion with one of my friends here in Denver. You know, he bought an electric Tesla. And he says, yeah, I've got a zero emission vehicle. And I said, your vehicle is not zero emission. Okay.
No, it's not.
The electricity for that vehicle came from some gas-fired plant, or God forbid, coal-fired plant, somewhere out in the, you know, eastern part of Colorado. So somebody was burning something to get that electricity into your car. It's not zero emission. Is there any doubt in your mind that when we get 30 or 40 million people plugging their cars in overnight, that you're going to have some, you know, huge drain on the grid that's going to have to be backed up? You know, solar's not going to make it because it's dark. And as California has demonstrated over and over again, you can't rely on wind power once the sun goes down because that drops off.
Well,
you
started with the first question. As we're going down the streets here to Chicago and in the alley, Chicago's had this horrendous 3 or 4 weeks. And right now the snow is piling up, and the issue is there's no place else left to pile it, right? So if we get another 10 inches this week, God forbid, we're going to have a real problem. Now, other cities...
I need you guys to invest in some kind of pipeline that can pump that water, you know, all that excess water that you guys have, and you have a ton of it, pump it across here to the Colorado and into the river system. You know?
So more of you Coloradoans can live out there even though you shouldn't.
I'm with you, but you know it's not just a question of people shouldn't live out here. It's a question of we're in the middle of a 5-year drought right now, and it's a mess.
Well, I get it, but now my question is right from the beginning. What you said though. This is, now, to get my Chicago story, I'll give a short piece of the story and apply it to Texas. The way to deal with this, if it happened every year, is you would totally change your snow removal technique.
Exactly.
Instead of plowing it to the side of the road and assuming that you're going to get a warm day in the next few days, like you almost always do here, the operative word being almost, that's you would end up with bulldozers and dump trucks. And you would go down the middle of the street with a bulldozer and you scoop the snow up and you dump it in the dump truck and you take it away. That's what they do in Buffalo. That's what they do in Minnesota. That's what they do in Toronto. The budget for that, for having all that equipment, is huge. But I'm sure when you go up to see skiing, I don't know if you've ever seen it, Maddie, but the plows go by if you're going on route, what's the route that goes, to Steamboat up there? It's one of the U.S. roads. If there's snow, you see all these plows and they shove it off to the shoulder. So sure enough, 2 days later, the snow on the shoulder is 10 feet high. They come by with this machine that is the most amazing thing you've ever seen. It's essentially a snow blower that two Maddies could stand up in the thing. And it goes down the shoulder, takes all that snow that's on the shoulder, and spits it about, 500 yards over the shoulder down into the valley below. So
there's a lot of power behind one of those things.
Yeah,
I've seen them.
So essentially you clean the shoulder up. So the next time it snows, you have a place you can push the snow again. Otherwise, by the middle of December, you can't plow anything because you can't. Where are you going to plow it? Into the pile?
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a massive difference if somebody were to say where, you know, this is what the global warming thing. Why all the, you know, they're not bad people. They're not stupid people. But when they talk about subjects they know nothing about, this is stupidity. What people talk about. Are you really going to say? Okay, global warming means that the 100-year storm is now going to be every 25 years or every 5 years or something. Now, you're going to take the entire map. There's a map for Chicago or any place in this country, even Houston and other places, where you drop a geological map on it, and they're going to have all these little places that are essentially, not storm, they call them, floodplains. Well, if you actually think that your weather is getting 10% worse on edge than it was 20 years ago, you're going to take that map and you're going to get a 10% buffer on every floodplain and you drop it on Chicago. All of a sudden it looks a lot different, Lou. And the insurance, your insurance costs, everything is going to be, you know, if you're going to say that Texas needs to have a backup to cover this storm, And as I said earlier, it's the first time ever they issued a wind chill warning down there. If you're going to now assume this is going to happen every 2 years, you better get everybody on board, because your investment everywhere, snow plows, salt trucks, you name it, are going to go through the roof. Maybe it's the right idea, maybe it's not. I'm going to say it's a little too soon for that.
Well, if you're a policymaker in Texas, and I'm floating the nuclear idea just because everybody screams about emissions.
We're speaking of nuclear, can I ask you a question?
To build a gas fired plant.
What if somebody agreed with you, which I do once in a while, anywhere in this country, to build a new plant on a new site? What do you suppose the time frame of that is to get the permits?
Oh, it would be at least 10 years and probably longer.
I think it would be 10 years to build and 20 years to get it okayed.
Well, I'm just saying 10 years permitting and construction. Although, again, there are new facilities that are much, the construction of which is much more streamlined. And I mean, the real issue in a situation like this, Chief, is permitting. That's you have a very concentrated anti-nuclear power lobby in the country that will be screaming, two-headed babies and all the other issues and Chernobyl and everything else, to try to shut down anything like this.
When was the last one built, even India? When was the last one built anywhere, including the U.S.?
Oh, in the U.S.? I don't know. I mean, in Europe, I mean, France has been building them for decades, and I think it's still building them up. I don't know about Japan. Japan's has a pretty common sense attitude toward it. I don't think any new ones have been built. I think of the big users. I don't think any new ones have been built in Russia lately. Or China.
Germany closed all theirs, right? And then now they're having power problems.
Germany shut all of theirs down.
Yes, I'm saying it.
Which now means Germany's in almost exactly the same situation as Texas. They've got a huge cold snap there with lots of snow. Plus, they've got the disadvantage. The cost of their power, I think, has gone up something like at least 50%. So it's the worst of all possible worlds. You're paying more for electricity that you can't get.
Well, in this area, this is so bizarre, Lou. I mean, this is how the politics works. And again, I don't know the full story, but it goes something like this, is that all the nuclear plants here at Commonwealth Edison, I don't know if they're theirs, I guess, but they combined with this, Allegheny Power not that long ago? I'm going to say not that long ago, but in the last couple of decades. And I think the people at Allegheny Power are really good at. So these nuclear plants, Dresden and these other places, I think they're like 20 years past when they were supposed to stop.
Oh, yeah.
But they're still bumping along fine, and they're by far on a variable cost basis the cheapest power that Commonwealth Edison has. And since they go all night, if you and I put together a plant that used Buku Electric, how's that for a number, and if we designed it so that we worked at night, we would have some of the cheapest power in the country here in Chicago. That's what Finkelsteel's did. Their blast furnaces were electric, but they only ran them at night, and that's why
you know where you see a manifestation of that policy? If you go to a dishwasher that has been manufactured in the last 10-15 years, you will see an option on the dishwasher to delay it. It's a delay button anywhere from 2 to like 6 or 8 hours. That's designed for exactly that.
Yeah, but your home does not get the benefit of that. You need a straight line in, because they did it at Pullman. We had a brilliant engineer, a guy named Sudhir Gopinath, a terrific guy. He was an engineer on a ship. And I go, Sudhir, how was that? And he goes, oh, Tom. He goes, you got to be a pretty good engineer, because you can't go to the store and buy a part.
Right.
But he put this furnace, and he got a trunk line right from Commonwealth Edison to run the thing from midnight to 4 a.m. And even though, the power was, so he actually heated the plant at night. In the morning, a lot of the machines came on, so he didn't need as much heat. I mean, the guy was really, really bright.
Well, in my house in Chicago and in my house here in Denver, I've got a utility meter that is exactly what you just described. It runs, it purchases power when I'm using electricity in low demand times. It's cheaper on that meter. And I remember specifically when they put the meter in at my place in Chicago. And at that point, you know, the guy who placed the meter said, yeah, run as much as your stuff at your laundry, your washing machines, your dishwasher, run as much of that after like 8 p.m. as you can, because it'll meter out cheaper on this
device. Think they do that with buildings here when they turn on the air conditioner, because when you turn an air conditioner on in a big building, it's a massive power surge.
Yes.
You need. But Lou, what I'm saying is economics, and people, you know, say, you know, economists are a bunch of idiots and they can't predict. Well, that part's probably true, but the behavioral economic, and the other thing is, I mean, when you think of economics, I mean, what is it? It's the science of apportioning scarce assets. So we just had to tie in with this. Lori Lightfoot's got her fanny in hot water this morning because she essentially diverted $281 million, and whether that's the right number or not, I don't know. I'm just giving the report, from COVID funds from the federal government to the police department. So wherever you guess, in other words, whatever we decide to do in Texas, if we're a Texican, if we decide, okay, this thing's not good enough, this is going to happen every 5 years instead of every 100 years, and we're gonna deal with it. So if it happens 5 years from now, everybody's gonna have power. I'm gonna say the amount of resources you're gonna have to put into that system, Lou, is something a number of people can't even imagine. But if you know what, if it's gonna happen every 5 years, it's something that you need to do. It's that important.
So let's say you're Abbott, the governor of Texas. How do you deal with this? I mean, my immediate step would be to get on, again, much like I thought President Trump should have done with COVID, get on, you know, television in Texas with your whiteboard and sit down and say, okay, here's where we were, and here's why we were here. We were here because this kind of a temperature event is literally once in a lifetime, maybe once in three lifetimes. Here's how we designed it, how the grid was designed. Now, you say, look, I didn't design it, I didn't write the specs. But the people who were smart about this said, this is what we need. So here's what the specs look like for this equipment. Here's why we cut ourselves off the national, you know, the ability to get power from other sources, you know, several states away. This all made sense economically. It did X, Y, and Z. Here's where we failed on certain things. Now, we get this cold temperature snap. Here's why this comes down. So now here are the decisions that confront us as you know, people in government. We can upgrade the grid over a process of whatever for an event that will occur, you know, once in whatever. And there's a cost associated to do that. And here's the gold-plated plan. Here's the silver-plated plan. And here's the nickel-plated plan. And here's how we think we're going to pay for it. Here's how we're, you know, the upgrades we're going to take. This is the path we're going to try to chart between spending megabucks on a system. And this, by the way, is the same kind of analysis that I did in occasion in contracts in DOD and when you look at weapon systems. Here are the solutions. Here's the middle ground we're going to chart. You know, we think it's a prudent course between too much risk of another one of these events happening and spending ourselves into nothingness with a system that we might never use again.
Well, that would be the
that's how I would do it.
Let's continue this after
the response.
Let's continue this after the break, Lou, because I have another monkey wrench to throw into that argument. Because, by the way, I'm agreeing with you. But anyway, Walmart's earnings were last night. They spent a lot of money on COVID, more than people thought. So the stock's down 720, trading 140 exactly. S&P futures down 14, NASDAQ futures down 91. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Lou Michaels. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 1575. Actually, we come back. 1225. I'm sorry. And the Nasdaq futures down 87. Again, the individual stocks moving. We got Walmart down $7. And I'll get a couple more of the earnings ones in a second here. Dow futures down 95. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 13 at 0.1%. The FTSE down 42.6%. CAC around down 14.2%. So not much going on over there. Asia, we finally have everything open here because Shanghai was closed for a few days, the Lunar New Year. Year of the Ox, what I understand. Nikkei down 56.2%, Shanghai up 20.5%, Hang Seng down 49, that's 1.6%. So not a whole lot going on over there except for in the Hang Seng, which has been up. Bonds, 1.299 unchanged. The Bund minus 0.34, Japan positive 0.09. I can't believe how these guys in Europe still keep that thing negative when everybody else is pushing positive the way we are. Oil, up another 37 cents, 61.51. Brent up 33 cents, 64.67. Was it maybe like 2 weeks ago? We were wondering if Brent was going to break through 60, and now it's 64, 67. So let's say went through 60 like dinner through a goose. Natural gas up 3 cents, 325. Arbob up another penny, 182. We've got gold is up $7, which at 1779. We've got silver down 12 cents, $27. Copper up a dime. Platinum up $13. And I guess we got to do the crypto. Bitcoin down 943, 51,375. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Which Russell said, since you're now reporting on the crypto, he needs to sell his.
You know what? As soon as the market gets... It used to be when the bull market made it to Time Magazine, that's when you sold.
That's right. 38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We've had some snowy conditions again this morning, a little unexpected, but not expected to last too much longer. Could get another inch or two of snow on the ground, but that's affecting the expressway. Slow travel times, especially on I-80 right near the Indiana border. There's all kinds of snow trucks and removers that are getting the piles of snow off the sides, and that's causing pretty jammed up traffic on the Indiana side and just across the Illinois side of the border on I-80. So keep that in mind if you're heading to northwest Indiana this morning. Coming in on the Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford, you'll see some red slow travel times as you approach downtown, but no accidents to report. Same for the Stevenson. From Midway in, you'll start to see a lot of volume and traffic build up. Nothing further southwest than that. Eisenhower looking okay. Edens and Kennedy are relatively quiet, but the Kennedy Express lanes on the inbound side are closed between Montrose and Ohio. So keep that in mind. No express lanes if you're heading into downtown. Suburban tollways are all quiet off the expressways. No accidents to report. Just have that one bridge closure that's been an issue all week. Bridge is stuck open on 106th Street between Muskegon Avenue and Buffalo Avenue. So you'll want to detour via 100th Street on the south side. Weather today, snow early, and then we'll actually have our warmest temperature that we've had in the last couple of weeks, but it's still only a high of 26. So still nowhere near freezing, but warmer than it's been. We'll at least get out of the single digits and teens like we have been for the last couple of weeks. Snowy early and then clouds, a high of 26. Right now it is snowing and 19 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine today with a high of 67. Right now it's clear and 46. In sports, the Bulls rallied back from a 25-point second quarter deficit to top the Pistons last night, 105-102. It was the biggest comeback in the NBA so far this season. Don't look now, but the Bulls are now tied in the loss column for the seventh seed in the NBA playoffs, currently sitting at ninth because they've played less games. But the Bulls are playing a lot better this year. The Blackhawks are playing better, too. They shut out the Red Wings 2-0 in Detroit last night, and the Hawks are now 9-5-4 overall. I don't think anyone saw that coming, especially without Jonathan Toews. And lastly, college hoops, number 22 Loyola survived, beating Valpo 54-52. DePaul lost another one, this one on the road at Seton Hall, 60-52.
Chief. Lou, I want to take this just a little bit to the side here, because I've been waiting for you all week for this kind of question. As you know, part of my odd personality is...
If with that kind of a lead-in, if I was at in front of you in person, this is when I would wander over to the Stocks and Jocks World Headquarters Breakfast Buffet and take a bite of donut and get a big sip of coffee. With that
yes.
kind of a lead-in.
Yes. Well, here's what, because we're starting to see it, Lou. We're starting to see people coming after Trump after he's out of office. We're starting to see, but here's my concern. You look at your assumption, even though you didn't say it, your assumption was that the current Texas power grid system is up to design spec and has been properly maintained, and the people who go whine every year to the legislator to get rate increases because they're going to do this, and this, have in fact done it. I don't know that that's true.
I actually wasn't going to make that assumption.
You started the argument where you started it. That's what a listener would have. In other words, you didn't bring it up. I'm going to give you a quick story.
True. I mean, part of that whiteboard presentation would be, and I'm starting to sound like Al Gore with his lockbox comment about Social Security. But the part of the whiteboard presentation would be, here's how we got where we are. And part of that presentation would be, we did not, use the money, or the state didn't acquire the ERCOT to use its rate increases to improve infrastructure. We didn't use it. We didn't work on this kind of infrastructure.
What makes you think that they didn't? Let me tell you a couple of quick stories, then you tell me.
Let me cut through this. I'm just saying this would be part of a presentation. Whether they did or they didn't is part of the story. And again, a competent, in my opinion, competent political leader would say, this is on your leadership. We should have done X. we didn't. Here's okay. why, but we should have done it.
All right, whatever. I'm trying to shift this off those rails for a second, in the sense that when the CBOE was built in 1983, okay, the building that anyone in Chicago is familiar with, because I know something about the construction of the place. One of the reasons why you wanted to build in Chicago, and my engineer buddies at the CBOE at the time gave me all these numbers, but Chicago was essentially a Class A electrical utility place, right? So they very seldom had a power outage. You never had a rolling blackout. Never had a crap to see going through California. But the CBOE, because of their, you know, I'll say use the term anal, they never wanted the place going down, right? So when you walk by it, Lou, you're going to find, if you dug under, you're going to find an entire trunk line from two separate power stations in Commonwealth Edison. One on the north end, one on the south end. One coming from the Pilsen area, one coming from the downtown area. So if in the unlikely once-in-a-100-year chance that one of those places went down, the CBOE paid to have an entirely separate backup system from another part of the Commonwealth Edison grid. Okay? So 10 years into it, Commonwealth Edison is now sliding. And my buddies are telling me, you know, this is not the same way it was. And they actually came through in front of the board, which I was on, and they came with a request for essentially putting a generator on the roof just in case, which this is in 1993. 1983, you wouldn't even have thought of that, Lou. So get a load of this. Chicago being how Chicago is, they do nothing but screw them every which way but sideways to shut down the street for a week. They wanted all this money to essentially put this transformer on the roof. The only reason why they needed to do it is because Commonwealth Edison was allowed to slack off, basically. But still, you had to pay through the nose to put the crane there for a week. You know, this is Chicago. So they put the crane up there. This is 1993. By 1998, on a hot day, they're calling up my buddy Eddie Joyce at the SIBO, who happened to be the brother of the fire chief, and say, hey, Ed, how about turning your generator on? We need the power. So in a 20-year span, the Commonwealth Edison allowed the whole thing to degrade. It was nowhere near the same spec as it was in 1980. And my buddy Bobby, I'll say one more thing. Maybe 5 years ago, Matty probably might remember this, there was a big rate increase. Because Commonwealth Edison said they wanted to replace like every transformer and every pole in the city, and how the whole system had been allowed to degrade. What's their system? They're indicting themselves as stupid politicians. So they get this big increase. Maybe 6 months later, there's a power outage down in Inglewood. So they send Bobby down there. And he says, the thing says 1906 on the transformer. 1906.
Yep.
He goes, I put the wires back together. I asked one of the kids, I got this massive crowd because nobody's got any power. I says, I'm the only white guy in the area. He goes, one of the kids, I asked him to go get me a big stick. I stood back from the thing and flipped the switch with the stick. Because I was afraid the thing might blow. This is after listening to these bleeps. But they got the dough, Lou. Maybe what the first thing should happen is the Texas power companies should all be taken out and put in the town square and put them in the what are the things you're heading in your the stacks, and they should find the places. I bet they didn't spend the money, Lou. I bet they got it and didn't spend it.
Well, I can't say that for sure. The model for public policy incompetence on an essential service for me was the Chicago Area Transit Commission that ran Metra, the rail, the commuter rail system that came in and out of Chicago that I rode every day. And I remember the first time the first winter I spent in Chicago, we're driving along and I look out of the train window and I see these guys basically setting fire to the train tracks. On, as we're coming into the yard at Union Station.
They're not setting fire to train tracks, they're heating up the switch.
Well, but it looked to me like they were setting fire to the train tracks. And I was with some guy saying yesterday, I said, what are they doing? And he goes, oh, they have to put kerosene on the switches and then set them on fire so that they can thaw them out. And I said, is it a surprise to the train people that it gets cold enough in Chicago that this happens? And he kind of laughed. He said, they've been doing it that way for 100 years.
Well, how else would you do it?
Pardon me?
How else would you do it?
Well, I don't know, but there are other ways. There should be ways other than pouring kerosene on your switches and then setting them on fire.
Well, the other way is they have an electric heater around the whole thing.
Maybe. And so that would be more reliable and easier to use than having to send crews out into the middle of a snowstorm to set fire to your train tracks. And in any event, Metro was full of stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm again, public policy, and then I want to move on to something else because I'm tired of talking about Texas.
Yeah.
Public policy response, a credible public policy response should look like somebody who is an actual leader getting up and saying, here's where we had the problem, here's where these problems are, how they get solved, we're going to move forward on this, and don't get mad at ERCOT or whomever, because we had an unprecedented, unanticipated, once-in-five-lifetime event here in Texas that nobody reasonably could have planned for. And if you think we should have, here's the trade-off for that. It just get up and make that explanation.
Okay,
I think that's the public.
The thing I'm trying to get out of you, and this has been one of my themes for a while, Lou, you know this, you've got to put up with me, is as we go through all the different things, the stuff with the GameStop and what's happened to the market, these things have been allowed to degrade. Now, what do you do with Commonwealth Edison if you find out, or people in Texas, that they whined at you for a decade for this massive increase so they can run around and replace all these transformers, and yet you know 10 years later you get a report they didn't do it? What do you do? They're obviously too big to spank. What can you do to these big companies? They just,
well, and this goes, now you're on one of my themes, and again, then we'll stop talking about Texas. You're on one of my themes, and my theme is you don't fine them, although you can. You don't publicly humiliate them. You start putting people in jail, and that's what you do. If you want big, big utility or big oil or big pharma to act like responsible corporate citizens, and they're not, you start throwing their leadership and the people associated with their leadership, you start throwing those people in jail.
I would
the response that you're looking
for. If it was 10 years ago, I would every bonus anybody got over a certain level of the pay grade in there, I want the money back.
Nah, that's too complicated. That'll take forever. You'll never find out where the money went.
But I'd rather have the money than have some old
criminal responsibility and fraud. You put people in jail. You don't need to put them in jail for a long time. You put them in jail for a year or 18 months, but you give them a felony conviction on their record.
Okay, but I want the money back, and I don't really care if I put a big fat guy who's no harm to me in jail.
But the money is easy, and you had this conversation. It with that whole LIBOR situation over in with Barclays in the UK. Barclays makes $40 billion off its LIBOR fixing and pays a fine of $8
billion. Well, the fine should be $40 billion, how much you made, divided by the chance of getting caught, which is probably 10%, so the fine should be $400 billion.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's going to be a reasonable goal, because you don't want to destroy the company.
Why not?
It's got a crucial role. You want to get their corporate ethics improved. Again, in my opinion, you start threatening people with jail time, they start talking, you can work your way up the food chain to
I don't know.
Responsible.
You need an electric company. You don't need those people in charge.
Again, my take on this is,
all right, well, at least we both want to do something. All right, what do you want to talk about?
Well, the thing I was gonna just opine on, I didn't get a chance to talk about the Super Bowl last week. Which I know now seems, because we have the impeachment, which is the other thing I want to mention. Seems like it was a long time ago, but
yeah.
I just, watching the Super Bowl, what I thought of, because I'm an offensive line guy, I thought, this is why you don't put second stringers in there to fight this kind of or face this kind of an onslaught. And if you do, you start giving those guys help. For all the quote genius of Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid, I was astounded. Remember I said the key to the game is going to be the adjustments that they make in the second half?
Well, one of the keys was that back on Tampa Bay ran pretty darn hard.
Tampa Bay's offense did what Tampa Bay's offense does. And they didn't make an adjustment to stop that. Maybe they couldn't. But on offense, they did not, as far as I could tell, they did not help out those offensive linemen. and it was inexcusable that Mahomes ran for 500 yards behind the line of scrimmage over the course of the game, running for his life on almost every play. It's ridiculous.
I wanted to ask you a football question, because you know way more about football than I do. I can say that when I, as a softball manager for 40 years, if all of a sudden Matty Weber is getting a great center fielder, is getting the Nobel Peace Prize, and he's not going to be there for a game, and it's a big game, I'm way better off, Lou, in finding somebody, even if he's not as good as Matty, in just putting him in center field than I am moving five other people around. And I thought that when Kansas City's left tackle went out, now, I don't know their personnel. You maybe do better than me. I think to just inject somebody, even if it was me, into the left tackle spot, rather than... He ended up with three people out of position, and I think he screwed himself up by doing
that. Well, that hurts. But it's three people out of position. That hurt him. But in addition to that, you have to accept the fact that the change you're making, that the alternative you've got, it's the lesser of the evils, is still not working. You have to modify your blocking scheme to help those guys out. And I didn't see them keeping backs in. I didn't see them chipping people. I didn't see them putting another tight end in to help Kelce on knocking some of these guys back. And again, once they realized that they could not protect Mahomes, then you gotta change your orientation. You may be the greatest passing team in the world, but if the other side can take that away from you, and that's what they did, if the other side can take that away from you, then you gotta go to plan B. And plan B is basically, let's take advantage of the fact that they are playing so soft that, let's start kind of crack seams with our running game.
Well, Louis, we talked a week ago that in my opinion, the beauty of those, of their system was, is they had the wide receivers that are good enough to where they got to be covered. They're not spectacular, but they're good enough where they got to be covered. So the idea is that you have Kelce and that other, what's his name, that the fastest guy in the world, running around on the inside with the safeties. And that one of the things we were talking about is how you need to put somebody on Kelce and not let him get off the line. Well, now the next week, you've got exactly the mirror image of the problem. That Kansas City really needs to have Kelce help out with the blocking, but they don't want to. That's not their game. Their game is to get that guy off free and have the safeties and linebackers try and mess with them, which they can't. So, here's a kind of a qualitative question to both of you guys. At some level, and I know when we get into, pretty serious playoff softball, if you're missing one person, it's the difference between you probably winning or losing that game, because if teams are that even out, obviously some of it's luck. I mean, if your center goes out and you just happen to have a guy who's a really good backup center, it might not hurt you at all, but I don't think they had another left tackle. So did that particular injury make that much difference? It looked to me like it did.
I think it did. But again, you and my father dealt with this all the time when he was with Minnesota. Guys got hurt all the time, and I mean they had one season where they got into the, I think they got almost to the conference championships. They lost the game in advance of the conference championship. One wild card, lost the next one, and then were out. And I remember him saying at the end of the year, he said, "I think I probably did my best coaching job," because he lost over the course of the season. He lost a starter at every single position on the line, and had to swap people in and out. The short answer is that's what you're paid to do as a coach. You deal the hand with the hand, or play the hand that's dealt to you. If when that guy went out, when they lost their tackle, the immediate response of that offense, and then it should have been, okay, we're going to put another guy in here. We're going to move some people around. We will not be as effective protecting the homes. We have to figure out and make some adjustments. And if that means we got to shut down this vaunted passing game, at least enough to get Tampa out of that soft defense they were playing, then that's what we got to do.
I would agree.
And maybe I'm wrong. I could be. I did not see the adjustments to their blocking, which was crucial. I didn't see the adjustments to their blocking that I think needed to be made, obviously because they didn't work. And I didn't see them try to think about, look, we got to get out of our passing game and start running the football, because they're giving us the runs.
Yeah, they were.
You can make 4, 3, 4, 5 yards a pop, because all we got to do is isolate on these front four guys up front, and if we can start doing that, we'll start moving the ball. That will bring them out of that soft game, and then we can maybe do something else. But I was really disappointed in that. It just wasn't a very good football game from my perspective.
Well, it's funny when you go back to some of these old NFL, you know, films and so forth. They talk about the Packers playing the Cowboys, and how the Packers had Forrest Gregg, and they had Ray Nitschke, and they had Willie Davis. They rattled through their 10 or 8 really key players. You lose Forrest Gregg and you lose Ray Nitschke, you might as well not show up, Lou. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you're not going to have anybody. Yes, the idea that you have to have somebody move up and you need to deal with it over the course of the year. But when you get down to that crucial game, you know, if the Cowboys show up without Staubach and without Bob Lilly, guess what? You know, what are their chances? I mean, well, those people are good because they're good.
That may be true, but you also can't make that transition, shift somebody into middle linebacker in place of Nitschke, and say, okay, I don't have to make any adjustments.
Oh, right,
I've got a body in there in place of Ray. You've got to figure out what that does to your defense. That's what coaches get paid for.
Well, you definitely have to figure out a way to help, but I'm saying there's always, everybody on a team. I knew in softball, I knew, even though I had 10 really good players, I knew the couple guys that I couldn't do without because I had nobody to go in that spot.
And yet, if they came out, you had to
do something.
You had to fix them.
And then you had to hope that nobody hit it to them.
Well, that's right. Or alternatively, you have to make up. Again, this goes back to the basic money ball scenario. What we have to do is manufacture. We lose great players. We have to manufacture their performance through combinations of other players. And that's what I did not see Kansas City even necessarily trying to do. And I mean, they're a good enough football team that they should have been able to make at least some adjustments with their offense. And I did not see them trying to do anything. I saw them trying to force the their playing style into a mold that was broken.
Well, they also had trouble with that middle linebacker on Tampa Bay. That guy is awful fast.
He was quick, but there are ways to deal with a guy like that.
Well, Luke, thank you very much. Good stuff, buddy. Yes, people. Maybe you should be the new Texas, commissioner.
No, yeah, right. I do a great job.
You might.
They'd be burning their furniture in the dark in like a week.
Well, I'm sure they'd want to get rid of you soon, but I think you'd do a good job. Take care, buddy. SP Futures down 14. As if you're down 99. Come back with Mr. Dan Janitas.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson, at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now!
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 15. They were down 20. And NASDAQ futures down 99, so we've come back a little bit. Dow futures are down 90. Virtually, well, I won't say all of that, but a lot of that's Walmart down $7 with their earnings. So that's half of it. That's half the Dow move. Dan, how are you, bud?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Well, assuming once we get out of the alley we're happy, then I wonder if I'm going to get back in going home. But other than that, we're fine.
Yeah, Dan's not dealing with the snow in South Florida, I don't think.
No, we heard Kenny telling us that yesterday. We were real happy to hear that.
Yeah, I think we're the only part of the country that, you know, I had my air conditioning on last night, so.
Well, I hope you're going out yacht shopping and get one big enough for Maddie and I.
But yeah, it's been an interesting winter. It's been a little cooler here than normal, which I don't mind. Things are good. I think there's been more optimism as you know in the market. I think investors are starting to feel more comfortable, and as more people get vaccinated, I think, you know, seems to be a better tone, a little less fair, although the market, it's not really been, we've just kind of charged right through this whole pandemic, over the past year. But I still believe that there's good times ahead, more good times ahead. I think we're, concerned would be, the 10-year now is up, it's up to 129 and from 0.93 at the first of the year. And that's pretty, percentage-wise, it's a substantial increase. I think we're going to see more of that. I think we're in the credit cycle, operates in its own world. It's, there's the business cycle, and then there's the stock market cycle, which I don't know now, maybe is closer to 10 years than 7 years, but the credit cycle is now, rates are going higher. We've turned the point. We've already turned the corner on rates and we're going to see high rates going forward. But what we've also seen this year from the beginning of the year is and I've been talking about this, is the steepening of the yield curve. And that has traditionally meant good times ahead. And the yield curve has remained steep throughout the whole year, but it's getting steeper. So the short end, the 1 month was at 0.09 January 1st, and now it's at 0.03. So you're not necessarily, with the increase in rates, it's not necessarily good for investors, for people who are saving or thinking their cash accounts are going to go up, because they're not, at least not in the near term. And I think the bigger concern is the debt load and the continued debt load that's going to put pressure on the longer end of the yield curve, 5, 10, 20, 30-year rates. And at some point that may have an impact on companies' cost of capital, ability to to get financing at decent rates. So there's been a lot of refinancing, but companies have had a long period of time with low rates, and the good companies have already done their refinancing, just as the good households, people that have refinanced their mortgages have had the opportunity, and so we will get used to higher rates. I don't necessarily see it impacting. Where it could actually be a positive is it could help this housing market that has just gone crazy in terms of prices, and it could put a little bit more balance in the market, you know, and take out some of the sticker shock, if you will, for, you know, especially for first-time home buyers. So that, to me, I would view that as a positive. So it can kind of, it may keep some of the, we've already had, if you will, a lot of inflation in the housing sector. It may just bring that back in line. I still think as a sector, it's very strong. Whether you're investing as, you know, in REITs or investing in, you know, home builders, I think it's a strong sector of the market. I think it will remain strong, but I think, you know, in terms of this crazy price appreciation, I think that's going to start leveling off.
Well, it comes down to every time, the only, we never really disagreed, Dan, but the only thing I sometimes push back on is that a lot of this stuff creates winners and losers where there really shouldn't have to be. In the sense that if people, well, I mean, this happened here. I've been through two or three of these housing fiascos. One I made some money on, one we didn't, and where most people basically, you get out of school, you get a job, you get a girlfriend, maybe not, you already had the girlfriend, you get the apartment, and then the timing of you buying your first house, I mean, obviously you can wait a little bit, but when the two kids come along, you're essentially buying it, or she's divorcing you, basically. I mean, I know that's not a sexist comment, but that's pretty, I mean, when people buy their first house, it's 5 years out of school, 6 years out of whatever, right. You know, and what you don't need is have one group. I mean, that's the interesting part. If somebody, you know, I'm going to say I'm young, you know, some old fart is going to tell you, wait a minute, when I did this, blah, 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 all I did. Yeah, when you came out, it was absolutely the right time. You bought a house at 50 grand and now the thing's worth $1 million and you never looked back. Give me a break. I mean, other people, they did it and they bought a house for 275 and 2 years later it's worth 175. I mean, it had nothing to do with them. I mean, people don't look at a house like, you know, you can't tell your wife with the two kids in a one bedroom apartment, the prices are too high, we're staying here forever. Well, fine, she's gonna, hey, you're staying here, but I'm not, you know, type of thing. So, I mean, there's a lot of social things to this, but what I don't want to have, I mean, when you talk about this, the increasing yield curve, the steepening, being generally very good. And I'm going to say, I can't ever disagree with that. I mean, Dan's a very smart man, and that's economically, yes. But now, when you're at the edges, when you're at the extremes, it's like, do I really need 4 gallons of water when I run a marathon? I'm going to kill myself by drinking too much. Now, the Fed, in their, to me, insane idea that there is no inflation and still buying stuff, they're going to keep the low end down because they say they're going to. They're going to pour more money in the system to get that done, which guys like you and me say all that's doing is creating inflation. They're going to squeeze the front end up. So they're creating the steepness of the yield curve, and their remedy is to make it steeper, like a bunch of morons, in my opinion. Right. So I don't know that the steepening for that reason is the right reason that you and I look to most of the time.
I agree. Yeah, no, I agree 100% that some of it is manufactured, if you will. You know, it's definitely the Fed that has the reins. You know, my concern would be like what happened in December, if we remember what happened in December of 2018, and the Fed went a little too far. And as a result, we had this sell-off in the market, and, you know, I remember trying to explain it to people. It was a tough month.
Then
the market came back in January, in February, at 19. So, but, you know, the Fed does hold a lot of power, if you will, in their decisions, and there's a lot of people that sit at the edge of their seat waiting for their next move. I tend not to. I haven't been a bond manager my whole career.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I know that's, you know, some of the effect is going to be felt in the short run, but then there's going to be this balancing of this pressure to, as we did in, early 19 to reverse course if we have to. We have the ability to do that. So, not too concerned. I think it's, you know, we will continue to see rates go higher. I would not be an investor of longer term bonds, because if you're buying a bond right now and you're thinking, we're getting 129, we're getting 130 for a 10-year treasury, where are you going to be a year from now if that 129 is suddenly 229? And that is what will happen. That's what I just, you know, I think we're in agreement on this. That's what's going to happen. So I would not be, I'd be looking at the short end for corporates. There's still, I think there is still room in, say, high yield, good name, high yield corporate bonds. I'd be looking in some other areas as we've discussed. For example, the preferred stock, if you want yield. A couple of the names that I've mentioned, like Chicken Soup for the Soul and Blue Knight, are doing very well. You're getting the capital appreciation and you're getting a nice fat 10% dividend yield. I'd be looking at real estate, REITs.
Yeah, no, I've asked you before, do those places have the ability to redeem that stuff? I mean, in other words, if you bought the preferreds in either one of those places and the company's continuing to do well, how long are you guaranteed the 10%? They can't buy the preferred from you, there's no call?
Well, they will have the ability at some point to buy them back, but that's sort of the good end of the story if you've been invested and they're doing well. So if they're taking cash to buy back your stock, that's a positive. So whether it's a preferred or common, they do have some of them do have provisions where they can call them, but in these cases, they will be able to call them, but they're going to have to pay market. You know, they can buy them back, but they're going to have to pay market value.
Okay, there's no. They're trading 108, but in 5 years they get to buy them back at 100 type of thing.
No, not at all. In fact, we generally don't. I think this is what I learned from my days at Loomis is not, you know, stay away from those from buying premiums or paying a premium when you're buying bonds or when you're buying, say, preferreds or paying a premium for stocks. I'm more of a value manager, and we think there's if you're paying a premium, you're gonna have, the natural tendency is the not natural. It's just it's mathematical. You don't have any upside. The upside has been taken out, and the price will go back to the maturity price or the call price over time, regardless of how much good news comes out. And you're going to continue to collect that interest or that dividend, but you capped your upside.
Well, Dan, I would agree right now that we're not in as bad a shape as I think we might be going to be. I think on this side of the argument, I would pick you. The thing that bothers me and the things that makes me think your side of the argument is shaky a little bit is because I listen to this guy Powell and the people from the Fed. It's like they don't even know. They're looking out the window here and don't even see any snow. I mean, it looks to me like they have no idea what's going on. They're acting like they have no idea what's going on. I mean, at the rate we're going here, 2% by December is not out of the realm at all. I
agree with you. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is that's why I would avoid buying, you know, 5, 10-year, 30-year treasuries. I don't think the higher rate is attractive from the investor's point of view. So if you're an investor in bonds right now, I'd stay away. I'd stay on the sidelines. I'd be looking elsewhere, like I said. I'd be looking at REITs and preferreds and, you know, some of the names that I've mentioned over the past few months, the Global Self Storage REIT, and the reason I want to mention it is it, you know, has like a 6.5% dividend yield and had a nice pop, like about a 15% pop over the last few weeks. And that happens to these smaller name companies if you're looking for diversification, that a number of the companies that I've mentioned as good alternatives that are paying dividends are smaller or microcap names, and they kind of come out of the blue. You know, all of a sudden the market's down or it's soft, and all of a sudden you have this 10% increase that seems like it comes out of nowhere. And part of it is obviously the trade and the flow, but I feel comfortable with that in this environment where we have a lot of liquidity, and liquidity is, we're going to continue to have a lot of liquidity. Well, so it's not a bad time to be buying some of these smaller names to add some alpha to your portfolio, to add some diversification, to add some, you know, it's one of the few places, like I'm saying, that you can find a yield.
Especially if you think they've got properties, they're going to do okay. I mean, if their properties are going to do okay, they should be fine.
Absolutely, yeah. And actually, if anything, some of the negative news that we had with the pandemic and with the sell-off has benefited the housing market. And it's benefited, you know, certain industries. The other industry that we've talked about that I still like, big time is infrastructure. You know, this was like a bipartisan agreement, I think, that both sides wanted to to see improvements in infrastructure, and so more funding is going to go in that direction. And I'm, you know, to me, that's a good place to put your money, looking for some of those companies that have, you know, that would be infrastructure plays, whether you're buying it on the equity side or buying a, one of these preferred stocks. Those are industries I think that we can expect to continue to see good performance going forward. So again, you're diversifying a little bit, you're adding some, you know, hopefully adding some income, and you've got up an industry that I think is very likely to see good results or better results going forward.
Well, Dan, what do you think, the two questions, these are kind of arrow right to the hard policy questions. You and I can, you know, debate this on air, and we do a nice job of it, to be honest with you. I think we do. But somebody somewhere in Washington, we're not the, I think both of us, you know, read a book without pictures, but we're not the only people that have. There's got to be somebody in Washington. If it's Janet Yellen behind the scenes, she's not a dumb lady, and neither is Powell. He's not a lady, but a dumb guy. Somebody has to be sitting there with Biden and the rest of these people and the congressmen saying, hey, look, I did it for you 1 year, 25% money supply growth. Look where the inflation really is, even though I'm saying it isn't. And if you make me do it again, you're not going to recognize this place a year from now. So careful with this $1.9 trillion, unless you're going to borrow it. That message has to be there somewhere in the ether.
I agree.
I mean, yeah. If it isn't, we got a real problem. But behind the scenes, somebody's got to sit there and go, what's the pushback on this? The pushback is another $1.9 trillion off the printing press, right?
Right, and we're going to feel the effects of that with higher rates and with inflation and with the, you know, that's going to naturally slow down some of this sort of crazy momentum we've had in asset values going forward. And I think the question, and I do agree with you, I think it's going to happen over time. It's going to happen, but that's the direction we're going in. And we could see, you know, the 10-year, you know, at 2+, either by year end or by, you know, early part of next year. And that, you know, that's just the way the market works. That's the way the credit cycle works. It's
well, the part that not a lot of people remember,
you got to pay for this additional funding somehow, and the additional debt. It doesn't go away.
Well, Kyle just sent me an inflation study that he dug up, and they've got it at 6.5% in the last 12 months, and they're not
that's
even
about what I've, yeah.
And but the other question I have for you, and I hope you have the answer, because I can't. How the hell is the European Union still keeping their rates negative? What are shooting up? Even Japan's up to 0.1% now. I mean how do those guys, what are those idiots buying?
I mean the thing is, they'll probably be buying some, you know, they'll probably be buying more US treasuries as rates go higher. That's probably what they'll be doing, but they tend to lag. I always think of Europe as a lagging. I don't think of them as leading in anything when it comes to the financial world. I mean, London is really the global capital of the world, and I worked for a London-based firm for a number of years, and it's great to get the perspective, but they still follow the U.S. So they're not doing anything magical over there. They're not going to be able to create something that's, you know, that is going to be, they're following us. And so I think they're going to go through the same pattern. I think it was good that we've seen this turnaround, if you will, that we've turned the corner in the credit cycle, and that we're not going further into negative territory, like Germany, for example.
But who's dumb enough to?
They still rely on us very much. What I learned from spending time over there as a portfolio manager and having German and British clients is, and Austrian clients is, you know, in the institutional level is, They're following what is going on. They're listening to Yellen and Powell, and, you know, they're following things. In fact, probably even more closely than a lot of U.S. money managers.
But for the Dan Janinas of the world in Europe, and I'm sure there's some, there's no way on earth that you have anything left in your portfolio with these idiots paying prices that gets the thing. You've emptied the basement, and if there's a bond down there, you've already sold it. Who could be left that's holding out?
Yeah, no, I agree. Where they're going, where I would say where a lot of the European portfolio, institutional portfolio managers are going, is the emerging markets. They're looking at, you know, they're chasing yield as well. So emerging markets have actually done well. You know, emerging market bonds. I'm talking about, so they're able to get some, they're willing to take the sovereign risk if it's a sovereign bond. They're willing to take the credit risk if it's a corporate bond. But they're looking at the emerging markets as opportunity and a place where they can find yield. And it's actually worked. So they're, when I was working over there, which was about 20 years ago, they were looking for yield. We were in the same predicament, and I was the high yield manager, and that's, I ran the corporate group for Marion Asset Management, and they were yield hungry, and they're yield hungry again, and the way they satisfied that was with U.S. corporates. U.S., our rates were always a little more attractive. They view us as the safe haven. I think that's going to continue. I think we're going to continue to see that in this cycle, if you will. And then they look at emerging markets, and they probably look at emerging markets more than the average U.S. investor. We're very U.S.-centric as managers here. They tend to be, a little more global when it comes to their investments in fixed income.
Well, that's why think you're not seeing – whenever people say, if you put more money into the system, you're going to drop the dollar. Well, you're not going to drop the dollar because the – guys in Europe are doing the exact same thing, and they're putting money in their system, and they're turning around and buying the dollars, so they're buying the bonds here.
Yes, exactly.
So it becomes a race to the bottom for everybody, essentially.
No, exactly, yeah. I think when it comes to the views of the market, just having worked for the firm, I was on the global policy committee in London for fixed income managers around the world, and they all start with the U.S. market. They have a mentality. They look at what's going on here first, and they may not, they may tell you that's not the case. It may not appear like that. That's what they're doing, but they really are. They're following in that footsteps. And the only area that I can see that they may be taking a little more risk on the yield side because they have to would be in the emerging markets.
Well, they definitely. The amount of foreign currencies that transact and clear at the same time between the two countries or the two areas of the world is so large to not pay attention. Hey, Dan, I think we have a question from one of the listeners for you on a stock that you've mentioned before.
Sure.
Yeah, we just had a question about Noble Energy. I know they recently went through a bankruptcy, and just wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, they actually just emerged from Chapter 11. When they came out, the bondholders actually got new stock of the company, which is going to be listed soon on a national exchange. I think when that happens, we're going to see a pop in the stock. The company has gotten rid of all of their, the debt. They have gotten rid of some underperforming assets, and they probably have the best balance sheet of any offshore driller right now. Couple that with energy prices in the 60s, oil prices in the 60s, which I think is going to continue. I think when we're talking about inflation, I think we are going to continue to see higher prices. There's been more demand. So I think there's some tailwinds for this company, and I think the stock, as soon as you're able to buy it, I think, the stock makes sense. They also, as part of the restructuring, they also are coming out with some, or have come out with some bonds that pay 6.05, interest, which is remarkable in this environment. And for a company that has cleaned up their balance sheet, it's going to, those bonds are going to be very attractive. So the bonds aren't yet free to trade. The new equity is not yet free to trade. But that, according to the CFO I spoke to the other day, that should be happening by the end of the quarter. So by the end of March, we should see some trading in those securities. And I think there's upside. This is a speculative situation. This is somewhat different than the other things we talk about. But I think on the everything is looking good for this company.
Dan, on a sort of a similar note, I have a lot of people that are in the XLE that has made this huge comeback. And actually, yeah. The USO, some people got involved in it, made a comeback, and they managed to get out of there alive. But, this XLE, the third biggest stock in there, and we've seen, you know, again, it's only back to 46, which compared to the 28 it got down to, we're looking, you know, looking pretty damn good. But in fact, the thing used to be like 60, 65, right? Well, your big companies like your Chevron and Exxon, Chevron appears to be the star of that group now. But the one that I absolutely cannot believe is still basically flat on its behind is this Schlumberger. The thing was $70, and now it's what? It's back up to 26. I mean, how much higher can the oil go without these companies? I mean, I'm not touting a thing or anything because I don't own any or anything like that. But at some point, they got to move. I mean, is this thing going to be 26 forever? Even if oil stays at 65, last time oil was 65, the thing had to be 45. I'm not saying, but I mean, are these guys that wounded?
They're certainly wounded. What is one of the toughest things, I think, to be an institutional portfolio manager, one of the toughest jobs that we have is to kind of go against the trend or kind of keep the noise out. And I think a lot of people are looking at energy and they're looking at a company like Schlumberger, which to me has always been one of the, you know, premier energy companies. And they're looking at what's happening here, you know, somewhat in the U.S. and saying, hey, you know, we're going to have all the shift to putting more focus on, you know, green and getting away from fossil fuel and all that. But who's going to say when we come out of this pandemic and people start traveling again, I mean, who's going to be fueling the airplanes and the cruise ships and the, you know, it's a time, you know, there's a time, I think, where I guess what I'm saying is I think that they're grossly undervalued and that there is an opportunity here to participate. You have to be able to sort of find the bottom, and I think this is a situation where we found the bottom, and whether they're going to be around, you know, it's very hard to understand what the structure of the company is going to look like 10 years from now, or any of the energy companies are going to look like 10 years from now. But for the short term, you can't go wrong.
Well, but
as an investor, there's definitely
here,
and I think it's a cloud of, you know, climate change is positive, but it's also, I think the challenge is that it's costly. And I think you were talking about a lot of the people in Washington not really knowing the system that well, and I tend to agree when it comes to issues like this, that it's not going to be an overnight, you know, flip the switch and all of a sudden everything's electric. There's going to be a transition, and the transition's going to take place over decades, you know, and in the meantime, the companies who are winners, that have been well capitalized, that have been well managed, will continue to perform. And if anything, they might pick up. They'll pick up market share. And, you know, there's situations like what's happened in Texas recently, that's, you know, short term, supply situations, that'll continue to happen. So yeah, I think there will be, people are going to look for areas outside of tech at some point, and they're going to see some areas like energy, and some names again that have been solid names.
Well, Dan, we got a dash, but
I would say this is a buying opportunity.
We got a dash in it, but I'm with you. Even with all efforts, and I salute them all to get more renewables and those kinds of things, keep things cleaner. It's hard for me to believe that 10 years from now, worldwide, we're still not using more fossil fuels than we are now.
I agree.
I mean, S&P futures down 18, NASDAQ futures down 108. Dan, thank you. Be right back, Mr. Frank Fahey.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holmes, Mr. Weber on the board. S&P futures down 20 now, or NASDAQ futures down 121. That's some nasty news. Jobless claims 861. Wow, 773 estimate. So we thought that number was going to start to come down here, and it has not. Dow futures down 125. I've got Walmart, which is the big hitter here, down 730. They came out with earnings, and let me get the stuff here, because it's actually pretty interesting. I'll do it after we're done with this. How's that for indecision, maybe? Over here, we got the DAX up 6, call that flat. FTSE down 59.9%. CAC around down 20.4%. Over in Asia, the Nikkei was down 56.2%. Shanghai up 20. That's the first day trading in a few over there. 0.5%. 0.5%. And we've got the Hang Seng down 49.5% because they were open yesterday. As we're aware of review, yesterday Dow was up 90, S&P was down 1, NASDAQ down 82, so pretty much an inside day. Bonds, 1.296, so they're about the same. One minus 0.35, and we got the Japan 0.09, which is unchanged there as well. We've got oil still rallying. We've got oil 39 cents, 61.53. Brent up 39 cents, 64.73. Natural gas down 3 cents, 3.18, as I guess we're getting a little warmer. RBOB up a penny, 182. I'm going to say this Sunday I'm paying 25 cents more than I paid last Sunday in the Suburban. Gold up 989 now, 1782. Still a long way to go to get to that 1850, which seems to be the top end of this range. We keep zinging back and forth. It looks to me like we're 1770 to 1850. We're just flying back and forth on the gold. Silver down 4 cents, 27.27. Copper up 8 cents, 390. The trade, all this other stuff, you can say what you want, the trade of the year was buying copper down about 270 or something, or 260, and buying this FCX, which I still don't have any. I think it started the year at $5. It's now $34.75. I haven't had a share along the way, and it's bothering the hell out of me. Platinum up $18, $12.75. I refuse to buy it now because it's too high, but it goes up even more every day. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic? How's that for a tale of woe?
37 minutes past the
hour. I'll show them. I didn't buy it at 5. I'll show them. I won't buy it at 10. And yeah. I won't buy it at 15. I won't buy it at 20. Where is it at 35?
Yeah. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're seeing a lot of delays on the area expressways so far this morning. No accidents to report, but we did get a dusting of snow earlier this morning, and that's probably contributing to that. But lots of red on the Edens and Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson slow travel times. Southside expressways a little bit better, but you will see some brake lights as you're approaching the circle on the Dan Ryan. Major crash in the area is on 8094 on the westbound side, but this is just across the Indiana border on the Indiana side. It's on the westbound side at Burr Street, and that's blocking the left lane, and that has 80 all jammed up, and it was already slow on 80 due to a bunch of snowplow removal trucks that were slowing down I-80 traffic, so you'll want to avoid I-80.
They were doing exactly what they said they were doing in Colorado. They shoved so much onto the shoulder, they had no shoulder left, so they were taking it all off the shoulder.
That's exactly right. Yep, that's exactly right. And then also on I-80, much further west, even southwest of Joliet, we have some vehicle spinouts at Ridge Road on I-80, which is exit 122, and then a crash on I-80 just west of there before Three Rivers rest area. There is a crash. So apparently some ice and some slick conditions in that area because we have a few incidents right there. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, clouds early. The little dusting of snow we got this morning appears to be over. We got maybe an inch. But that's not too big of a deal compared to what we've had the last couple of weeks. We'll reach a high of 26 today, overcast skies. Right now it's cloudy and 19 degrees downtown, and the snow appears to have stopped. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 67. Right now it's clear and 47. In sports, don't look now, Chief, but the Bulls and Blackhawks are actually pretty entertaining to watch and find themselves competing for playoff spots in the early season. Bulls were down 25 in the second quarter. They stormed back and beat the Pistons 105-102. Blackhawks shut out the Red Wings in Detroit 2-0 and are now 9-5-4 on the young season. So good starts for both of those teams, especially the Blackhawks, but the Bulls are right in the thick of it as well. College hoops, number 22 Loyola continues to make its case for the NCAA tournament. They held on to beat Valpo 54-52. DePaul is just a disaster, and they have been for a decade or longer. They lost again to Seton Hall 60-52.
Good thing they fired Joey Meyer, huh?
Yes.
I have a question for you. Frank, how are you?
Excellent.
You know, I hear Frank is all pissed off because he didn't go out and buy like a plow pickup truck like a month ago, because those guys got to be making out.
Yeah, they're making some dough the last couple of weeks.
I heard rumors, not that I'll say who my rumors are, but my guys, I've had them do some work around the place. Some of these snow people, removal people, that have the guys helping out with the shovels and they're making $40 cash, Manny, an hour. That's how much they're charging these people that do lots and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how long does it take to do like a normal size lot, like an hour?
Must have so many lots, but I mean, the dude's doing 16 hour days.
Yeah, no, I don't blame him.
Yeah.
But to me, I'm just saying, if I like that church by us that has a decent sized parking lot, I don't know what is that, 40 cars or 50 cars or something? $40, okay. That probably takes them a half hour.
No, I mean, $40 an hour, the guys are making cash.
They have to do the sidewalks, the steps.
Yeah. They're doing everything, because you got guys with shovels.
Yeah, but I'm saying that to me, that doesn't seem like a crazy rate. That seems like a normal rate.
I'm saying I bet the church for the whole, all the way around the front and everything, I'm going to guess it's at least $300. Easy.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. But they only have one truck out there. I mean, it's not like
the rest
of
the guys are hacking
trucks
away. Yeah, the other guys are using the shovels. If it wasn't for those guys, we'd have trouble. By the way, you mentioned earlier, I have to push back on you, Maddie. What's another couple inches? By the way, on the way out of the alley this morning, that noise you heard was our skid plate hitting the snow. We don't need another couple inches. We'll be up. We'll be shoveled under it to get out.
Oh, well,
the problem was the first 11 inches of this extended snow was very wet.
Yes.
So it froze. It was almost unshovelable. People like you and me have no business looking at it.
It's heart attack snow for sure.
Shoveling.
And the bottom of that, like Frank said, the bottom at least 2, maybe 3 inches is just hard ice.
Yes.
So then you have 15 inches on top of that. It sucks.
If we just would have got the lake effect snow, you and I could have tossed that in a half hour. I mean, even in the alley. I mean,
yeah,
that was so light, it was scary. It was like Colorado snow, but the stuff it was on.
South Bend snow.
Yeah. All right, Frank. We've got a down move today. We got Walmart. Actually came out and said they had 6.6, I believe, we get the actual number, I think it was 6.6% same store sales increase. I'm going to say I am stunned at how bad that is. I would have thought with the inflation that it's around and the other places closed, I would have thought their same store sales would have been way higher than that.
That is a testament to how bad their online program is.
No, their e-commerce was up 69 cents, and same-store sales grew by 8.6%. And I think the price.
I would have expected e-commerce to be up higher, but then again, how much money did they spend on the build out for e-commerce?
A lot.
Yeah, so we don't know.
It also, you would think their e-commerce would have exploded.
It did.
Well, 69% in 1 year is not bad.
You know it is, but I mean, what is Amazon's?
I'll bet it's not up nor near that much.
You think so?
I'll bet it's up 20 or 25. But that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I'd be anxious. I mean, we should probably...
Well, I mean, up from a low number to begin with isn't that big of a deal.
Right, right.
I'm just saying, like, they got to stay open the whole time, and everyone's ordering online. You would think... Plus, they started doing a lot of the, you know, free shipping and one-day shipping and stuff. I just would have expected... I wouldn't expect
Walmart
them to be down.
By us are crowded, Tom.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I have the...
By the way, I haven't been inside of a Walmart in, I don't know... I bet I've been inside of a Walmart less than five times in my life.
One of
elitist.
One of, yeah, you're.
Where's there a Walmart by me?
Well, there aren't. They wouldn't let them in the city. There's only like one in the city.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And I remember, Tom and I go back far enough when their advertising campaign emphasized that nothing in the product was built outside the United States.
That was many, many years
ago.
Yeah,
when did that end?
Yeah, that was a long time ago. I go to the Sam's a lot. Now, I'm talking about an elitist. The Sam's is definitely a more... blue-collar kind of place in the Costco.
I've never been inside of a Costco either, so there you go.
You're the only yuppie in the world that hasn't been to Costco in Elston or on Clybourne?
Never once.
Wow.
You've never even been in the parking lot.
I can't believe that Jill doesn't have you over there buying your paper towels and the 12 rolls together or something, your TP enough for 40 years.
Nope.
God.
There's no reason to live that way, in my opinion. You don't need to buy 5 years worth of
steak
stuff.
And gasoline.
Well, but if I didn't buy the stuff for the office there, I mean,
for an office, completely different. You want to buy in bulk, and you have the storage to do it. But in people's houses, the people that buy 500 rolls of toilet paper at a time, I don't get it.
Well, it's not 500.
Do you need 30 pounds of, you know, 30 gallons of peanut butter? I just don't get it. It makes no sense to me.
Once you're older than 50, you need the 500 rolls of toilet paper.
The peanut butter, you get two for the... Well, you know what it does? Everything's an education, though, man. You realize...
I'll never live my life that way. I'm just telling you right
hey,
now.
Hey, the peanut butter is good, and it's only two.
You know what? We're going to... Now, if we were on the trading floor, what would we do with what Maddie just said?
Fade it.
No, we would get out the market maker card, we would write down what he said, and we would timestamp it and keep it. I'm going to say 10 years from now, there's three little Maddies running around, and he's a fixture at the Sam's and Costco every Saturday morning.
If you have a big family, then, you know, I'm sure it makes sense to stock up on certain items. Totally get that. But, I mean...
And you're going to have the tan minivan.
I'll definitely not have that. I mean, do people even make minivans anymore?
Oh, sure. Well, they're
now
all...
Now it's just the big SUV.
It's the SUV with the three seats.
No,
it's
like the Toyota Sienna.
Actually, the minivan is... You know, when those things first came out, I, of course, laughed at them totally. We went skiing, and it wasn't four-wheel drive. It was just front-wheel drive. We got the original Dodge Extended. We put six people in it, all the skis. It got me up and down on the mountain pretty easily, and I think we got like 27 miles at a gallon. I mean, it was not a bad... There's a reason why those things sold. they were. I mean, and everybody could pilot it out of the side door pretty easily. I mean, there's a reason why everybody bought one. I mean, obviously, you didn't want to be in the help.
And they were a moneymaker for Chrysler because it only lasted 4 years.
Sorry. So, Frank, we have just had a long conversation with Dan regarding how, you know, what is happening with behind the scenes and in front of the scenes in Washington regarding the inflation starting to perk up. We're starting to. I mean, is somebody somewhere telling these guys that if we just pony up another $1.9 trillion that we're going to have, you know, that we're going to have some problems? I mean, we were also talking with Lou about, you know, essentially crime and punishment. I mean, how much of the Texas problem is just correct planning? I'll say correct planning for a storm that's never supposed to be like that, or how much of it is they thought they had a system that was up to speed doing to this level, and it turns out through people siphoning the money away and doing like Commonwealth Edison does here, that the system was nowhere near the specs it was supposed to be. I mean, they're
the only system in the country that's not regulated by the feds, too.
Well, it's all internal.
But right, but the western part of the state has a different system, and it's working.
Is the weather as bad there? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, it's worse. They're in the mountains.
Okay.
So, but they winterize. These people are, you know.
Well, what I'm saying is...
They made their house of straw. Screw them.
Well...
You know, their attitude... I know what their attitude towards Puerto Rico was.
Well, I mean, I guess...
I'll share the same attitude towards them.
Well, I mean...
Meaning the politicians in Texas.
Oh, I don't disagree with that. But I'm saying, I was trying to go through... Lucas, I used to listen to the engineer guys at Pullman. And it, whenever you do engineering, it's always, what do we need? What's the planning? What are the assumptions we're making? And because I know that the New York City, talk about a story that hopefully will take 30 seconds. In those kind of bids, they would say, you have to define the system yourself. So when they made the New York subway cars, they put in the spec that there would be no more than a 1.5-inch gap in any rails anywhere in the New York system. Well, bull bleep. There were 3- and 4-inch gaps. And so when they designed a truck, the truck was 9,500 pounds, and the truck should have been 12,000 pounds. And, of course, the trucks all fell apart because they didn't design the trucks for the system as it was, whether they lied to themselves or what they did. So the question is, should Texas, number one, should the design go from a storm like this once every 100 years to once every 5 years? And if the answer to that is yes, which I sure as hell hope it isn't, what is that going to cost? And I'm going to say it's going to be buku bucks, and that's a lot. I mean, for you all of a sudden to design that into the system, I don't know how the hell you do that in less than a 20-year period. Or did the stuff that was supposed to be upgraded that you let your utility companies, like we did here, raise their rates and say, this is what we'd be going to doing, and all of a sudden they didn't be going to do it. Well, and that's another problem. Is that a felony? Is that a fine? What is that? I mean, I think there's a lot to look at here, Frank, and that's just me from the various jobs I've held, how people look at this stuff. And I don't see anybody, well, I'm not like there's nobody, I don't see anybody that has that sort of focus anymore. If you didn't work in a manufacturing and design build facility, you would never have that focus. Okay, what is the environment we designed for? What is the worst case scenario? What did we get? Should this system have been able to withstand this? I'm guessing the answer is no. But if the answer is yes, why didn't it? How did it fall out of favor? How did the maintenance not happen? Is that our fault? Is it the company's fault?
Well, it's the company's fault, but it's management's fault. And it's companies like McKinsey and Company, the consultants that force people to look at short-term profits. Jack Welch, he certainly planned well for the future, didn't he?
Well, Jack,
it's tongue in cheek, but that's what's happening.
You know what Jack Welch was?
There's an ethos where they don't care about keeping up the doing the maintenance. They don't care about having customer service.
Well, as we talk about
staffed by people speak the same language as their customers, even.
Well, Matty, as we talk about interest rates, and we talk about how you plan, and you talk about the worst thing you should ever do, it's all a question of timing, right? I mean, it's like if somebody fumbles the ball in front of you in the football field, Matty, what does every coach tell you? Just fall on it. Don't try and pick it up, right?
Yeah.
Yet, if you pick it up and run with it, you're a hero. It's a question of if you know there's nobody around you, you pick it up. You know, so, I mean, it's a question of timing. I mean, Jack Welch was the single biggest recipient of stuff out of the Resolution Trust. The people who got in the Resolution Trust, the savings and loans, did it for doing something you're never supposed to do. You don't ever borrow short-term and lend long-term, correct? So what did Jack Welch do? He saw all these places going at 20 and 30 cents on the dollar. He knew that interest rates were 12 and 13%, and they were only going up. And GE had a AAA credit rating. So he borrowed short-term and bought all those places. And for the next 15 years, the short-term rates he borrowed at did nothing but come straight down. So he did the exact same thing is the people who got themselves in trouble 5 years earlier or 10 years earlier. But the timing is everything, as they say. Am I wrong, Frank?
You're exactly right.
And so GE Capital got to where they were bigger than the rest of GE, the aircraft engines, the light bulbs, the power equipment, all that stuff, to the point where I think at company meetings, I'm not even sure the manufacturing guys were allowed in the – they didn't even get the top-shelf booze, Frank. The GE Capital guys were the guys that were the stud cakes. And for 20 years, the interest rates did nothing but go down. And all of a sudden, at the end, They got all these properties that now are overpriced. They didn't sell them, and they got in trouble, right?
If the top shelf booze isn't in there, don't you just walk out, Chief?
You and I, yeah.
No, we go to a dispensary, Maddie.
Yeah, but then there's a friend of ours who's been
and
on the.
And then who cares?
Yeah. There's a friend of ours who's been on the show. He comes over here. The bars are closed, right? So we just happen to have. I said, "Why don't you come over for a drink? We'll have it up at PTI after it closes on a Friday night." So this is, you know, I'm not saying he's an attorney. Well, I got some really good booze. He puts it in Pepsi and says, "I don't like this booze." I said, "You put it in Pepsi. What is the matter with you?" So
what is he, a 19-year-old girl? Who does that?
Who does that? I'll have a rum and Coke. I don't like the rum. What are you talking? Anyway, he's your friend, Frank. What can I tell you? He's my friend, too. But, you know, when somebody's your friend, you got to take the good with the bad, as they say.
He's a self-sider.
Yeah, well, no, he's not like me.
Yeah, well, yeah.
He's a accidental south-sider. All right, Frank, what
actually, I moved down to the south side, and I'll admit, I like it. I like it a lot.
And, I start taking you into some, now that you've got your shots, like, it's like I'm talking about your dog, Frank. Maybe, well, Frank's got his shots now. I could take him out with me to the bars.
No, you can't until I'm chipped.
You're going to get chipped? You know, we haven't heard much about that, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised that's coming.
Well, you know what's coming. Bitcoin. I've been watching this. A hero of ours, Paul Tudor Jones, said that it's the fastest horse in the race to beat inflation. And that's what we're seeing now. He said that over a year ago.
All right, Frank, you know more about Bitcoin than I do, and so does Maddie. Has it reached the stage, and again, I just want both your opinions, and I want Maddie's as well, because mine is useless in this area. Is the Bitcoin phenomenon, in terms of actual money involved, if that thing one day we walk in here and it's 5,000, is it enough to cause enough of a shake to take the market and other stuff with it? I don't know.
Some, but right now the Bitcoin market cap, just for Bitcoin, not Ethereum, not Doge or the others, is about $980 billion.
Oh, so it's pushing a $1 trillion. I'm going to say then, if that drops 50% in a week, that's a problem.
Yeah, but it's only $500 billion. The bigger problem is it's going to get regulated, and it's going to be under the guise of money laundering.
What are you, the new
ever? How do we know we aren't buying it from the Republic of Korea?
Oh, we don't.
You know,
we don't. People have this vision.
Or the Red Army.
We
don't. So what they're going to do? Is it's totally non-transparent. They're going to force transparency under the guise of money laundering, and it's going to be...
By the way, you can trace... I've had two or three people who are knowledgeable tell me that the idea... Now, just because there's no name attached to it, you can trace every single transaction through the computer it came from. There's no way on earth that it's not traceable. I mean, if I did it from here, you could trace it to my PTI.
There's no name to it. It's just numbers.
Well, okay, but you can trace it to the PTI computer and my behind sitting in the seat. You can trace it to somebody's cell phone.
Well, then you have a problem with computer security, and I suggest you talk to Maddie's company. you got to build a wall, Tom.
What, around my screen?
No. Electronic wall. You can cloud things up.
I'm going to say that every transaction that takes place on Bitcoin, that's they had the lady was on yesterday that they found the North Koreans about. The guy says to her, Bitcoin says it's anonymous. She goes, it's not anonymous. How do you think we found them? Because every transaction happens on a machine. It's every transaction is traceable. Now, the person hitting the keys I don't think is traceable, right? There's no name attached to it. But, I mean, you can certainly follow it to the spot.
To a spot, but then who's on that account?
Well, but I'm saying it's not...
Well, the gnomes of Zurich let us see the...
Okay, but what I'm saying is if I transfer you 50 grand and you're in Taiwan, they know that from my spot, 50 grand went from here to a spot in Taiwan. Now, I guess if we both...
It's not like you sent me 50 grand in cash...
But if
from it,
but,
the third bank,
okay. But if
the
you,
bank of Taiwan, they'd know where it was.
But the Bitcoin,
the anti-money laundering.
But the Bitcoin has again, Maddie, kick me if I'm wrong. The Bitcoin has an identity to it. It's not just a random Bitcoin. So if
I understand that.
So if you take it to the Bank of Taiwan and take out either Taiwanese currency or dollars, they're going to know you got it there, right? Maybe I'm right here or not. They're going to know you as soon as you cash it.
They won't know it's you. They know somebody did.
You think the Lakeside Bank is going to let me walk out on 50 grand in cash on an ID?
No. You aren't going to have it sent to the...
I'm walking out the door with it in my pocket.
Right. If you send it, if it's cash, if it's Bitcoin, you get end up with access to Bitcoin.
Someday if I want
to... How do you convert it to cash is another thing. Once you convert it to cash, it's not a Bitcoin anymore. It's cash.
But someday I might want to go buy a glass of wine downstairs, and I need cash.
Right. Well, then once you convert it, you've left your fingerprints on it.
Okay. All right.
Or only shop at companies that accept Bitcoin.
I guess. Oh, God.
That's and then the gotcha is going to be is, what are the accounting standards going to be for companies that accept Bitcoin?
That's interesting. SP Futures down 25. NASDAQ Futures down 135. We're leaking here. Again, Walmart's leading the pack, down $7. We'll be back on tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.